Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome to the show. In case you don't know, it's been airing for now 20 years here on WBT, the David Chadwick Show, and it's trying to intersect faith and values with different issues in our culture, both locally and globally. It's been a pleasure doing the program all these years. Thank you, listeners, for joining me on a weekly basis. And thanks to my friends at Ruth Chris Steakhouse and also Perry's Fine Jewelry. Your sponsorship of the show allows me to keep doing this on a weekly basis. Well, today, June the 28th, 2020. It's an interesting day for me personally. If you folks don't mind, I'm going to have a stroll down memories lane, if you will. June the 29th, 1980, was my first Sunday preaching in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was called to a church here, and I served it for some number of years, have started another church, but 40 years ago today, I stepped into the pulpit and preached my very first sermon. It was from Joshua, the first chapter, verse 9, about God's call to Joshua as he led the people into the promised land to be strong and courageous. And I hope I've been bold, strong, and courageous through these years, trying to stand for truth and what God would want more than anything else. I want in my heart, beyond anything else, when I see him in heaven one day, to hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." And I've had to take stands that have not been necessarily popular, but I've also tried to take stands where it gives people life in every possible way, because I believe that the Christian's job description is John 10:10, where Jesus said, "I came to give you life and to give it to you abundantly." Anything that promotes and gives life, I think, is the job description of the Christian. But then Jesus also says it's the enemy who came to kill, steal, and destroy. That's his job description. So anything that has to do with killing and destruction is not of God. And so I've always tried to stand on the side of life and giving hope to people. That's always been very important to me, and WBT over the last 20 years of those 40 has been an important partner with me in getting that message out to people. Hey, we're about life. Let's give life to people. So today I've wanted to take a stroll down memories lane and to reflect upon those 40 years. I've also wanted to look at how the culture has shifted and changed, and how, as we, a people of faith, need to be in that culture and truly make a difference, in the words of Jesus, as salt and light in that darkened culture. So Ed Billick, my producer, has opened up his microphone, as has been the case over the last couple of months as we've been in the middle of this COVID-19 crisis. Ed and I have done the shows. We have tried to give you interesting insights into things that are going on. Today, hopefully, with 40 years of experience, we can continue to do so. First, Ed, welcome. It's good to see you. Can you believe 40 years?
David, good morning. Congratulations. And I say congratulations from all of us in the Charlotte community for all the lives you have touched, and so many are listening to this show right now, the lives you have touched, and look forward to your message every week. A couple things going on locally, going on in the news, some crazy statements. I heard my buddy Big Ben Roethlisberger came out yesterday, said something, and you have another individual that made a comment. Maybe we cover those couple topics, and then we'll get into your 40 years.
Yeah, let's real quickly look at Roethlisberger, who talked about his addictions and his problems in life and how he has come into a deep, abiding faith with Jesus, and he now feels like those have been freed from his life. And, you know, there will always be struggles in our lives with different things, no matter how much we love the Lord. But I have found this to be true, that if you want to be free from the power of sin, Romans 6:6, which is a gift from Jesus when you come into faith with him, the way you overcome an addiction is to love something more. And I really believe that when people love Jesus powerfully, profoundly, they love him more than the addiction, and they are set free from the power of that addiction in their lives. So when I deal with people with addictions and they're trying to be set free, the only thing that ever gives them hope is the grace of God and loving him more than the addiction. It sounds like that's what's happened with Ben Roethlisberger, and you, Ed, as a Pittsburgh Steeler fan, can have hope that he'll return to his form and be the great quarterback that he has been.
If we even have an NFL season.
Isn't that interesting? With all that's happened with our governor again coming out with a staying in phase two, there's this still national COVID crisis. Will we even have an NFL season? What do you think?
Then you said earlier, because I know we only have a minute or so in this segment, there was an outrageous comment made by some comedian or something?
Yeah,
or activist
Sean something? King is an activist, and he basically said, as a part of his protest of all the police brutality and Black Lives Matter and everything, that we should tear down every statue of Jesus or Mary or Joseph. I guess he wants to make sure Protestants and Catholics are all included, because they suggest slavery. And it's just ridiculous, Ed, because, you know, I've traveled all over the world. I've been into the Mideast. I've been to Africa. I've been to India. I've been all over. And it's in every culture acculturates the color of Jesus' skin to the color of the people's skin in that culture. So in the middle of Africa, I'll see statues of Jesus who's as black as can be. And they just acculturate his figurine to their culture. And what's most important is his love is what dominates their hearts. But I just don't understand why he would say something like that.
That's an example of cultural, not shifts or changes, but outrageous comments being made that have surfaced here now in your 40th year of celebrating your ministry.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to, as we get in the next segment,
let's talk more about it, and we'll see how I think the culture has become angrier and more defensive than it's ever been before, which means we've just got to love better. We who follow the Lord just need to learn how to love better, and that's what we'll talk about today. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back.
WBT, a radio.com station.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Well, today is a day of real interest for me personally, and I hope you folks don't mind me walking down memories lane. For on June the 29th, 1980, I preached my first sermon ever. I was called to a church here in Charlotte, and I began my ministry on June the 29th, 1980, and here we are, June the 28th, 2020, and it's exactly 40 years later, and I'm preaching on Sunday. I'll have a chance to speak to the people who will gather. We're going to gather at a barn and a farm out near Clover, South Carolina, that's real wide open, 150 acres. People can do social distancing, making sure that we take care of everyone, but a chance to preach my 40th anniversary sermon. What a ride. My wife and I were reflecting upon that this week a lot as we talked about it with some friends of ours and actually did a couple of podcasts together regarding 40 years of ministry. Folks, from 1980 to 2020. So here we are. I'm still alive and kicking, in great health, love what I do, still feel called by God to give people hope through the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I can't wait for the next years in the future, even as we enter into these dark days of the COVID-19 crisis and also the racial tensions. I still can't wait to tell people about the love of Jesus, because I still believe with all of my heart that it is the answer to all of our problems. My friend Ed Billick has his mic open, and we're going to, again, walk down memory lane and look at 40 years of life together, my wife and I, but also 20 years here at WBT. Ed, thank you again for helping me walk down memories lane.
David, it's a pleasure, and I kicked the segment on with that song from Avalon, Everything to Me, and it says it all started in Sunday school. I don't know, Sunday school, where did your passion for this career, for this, you heard God speak to her. Where did it all start? Where did it come from?
Well, I guess I'd have to go back to remembering my life as a little child. I have an older brother and sister. My dad was a pastor, married to my mom for 63 years before she passed away, and then ultimately he passed away a few years after that. They were loving parents, and I've always believed faith is not taught but more caught. They lived the faith. I saw my dad many times going to the scripture to try to find answers. I saw my dad praying on his knees at times when he was trying to seek God for something. I also saw him go minister to people in their direst days. And so faith for him was meaningful, and I think I got to the point where I said, I want what he's got. And it ultimately became real for me, but I had to go through some different iteratives in my own life before faith became real to me. I think, first of all, what happened was I began to grow. I mean, became tall. And what I remember is, as I grew up in my family, that I always loved sports. I'd watch it on TV. I would have these little soldiers, you know, from these sets of army soldiers that you would play with, and I would turn them into sports teams, and they'd play against each other. My mom always would laugh, going, "You'll turn anything into a ball game." And I started getting really tall, but I was really skinny as well. So when I was a 10th grader in high school, I made the junior varsity basketball team. I was 6'5" tall, 150 pounds. I mean, I heard every skinny joke imaginable, like, when you take a shower, I bet you have to put the plug in the drain or you'll go down the drain with the water. You know, that you have to run around in the shower to get wet. I mean, I heard every skinny joke you can possibly think of. but I loved basketball, and I was okay with it. Got pushed around a lot being so skinny and weak. And then, Ed, my dad was in Kansas City pastoring a church there, and my mom developed a strange allergy to cold weather. It was the weirdest thing you could ever imagine. We'd only been there 3 years, but it was a stark difference than what we knew here in North Carolina. So when she would come in contact with extreme cold weather, and it did get pretty cold in Kansas City during the winter times, her throat would start to swell shut. And the doctors said to my dad, you need to get her to a warmer climate or she could really die. Well, that was a stark realization for my dad. He didn't know what to do because, again, we'd only been in Kansas City for 3 years. He then prayed and asked God for help. The mayor of Kansas City at that time was named Roe Bartle. He was a huge, rotund man, over 300 pounds, a gifted speaker like you can't imagine. And he and Dad, again, had become very, very close friends. Well, he got a phone call from a church that said, we've heard your pastor preach, and we think he's really good, but we know he's only been there 3 years. We're coming through you because we know you know him. Do you think we should approach him? And Mr. Bartle said, well, I don't know. What church is this? And they said, well, it's First Presbyterian Church, Orlando, Florida. So Mr. Bartle knew my dad had this problem with mom in the cold weather, so he went to Dad and approached him, and Dad thought, I've only been here 3 years, I don't know, but the more he prayed, he felt like this could be the answer of the Lord to get my mom to a warmer climate. So they entered into conversations and prayer together, and sure enough, he got a call from First Pres Orlando where we went down there going into my junior year. Now, something happened between my sophomore and junior years where I went from 6'5", 150 pounds to 6'7", and a half, my present height, and 185 pounds. I just suddenly filled out. The coordination came. We went to Orlando. I went to Boone High School. I made the varsity team, and I started playing, and I just got better and better and better. So soon the calls started coming in to recruit me from different schools, and ultimately, as most of the listeners know, I signed a scholarship offer from the University of North Carolina. Dean Smith came into my home and offered the scholarship to me. I signed it with a Carolina blue pen. I still remember it vividly. And then I went to Chapel Hill in 1967 and began my basketball career there. Well, while I was there as a preacher's kid, with faith being in my heart, I just had some profound experiences with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and other people who really knew Jesus. One of those was Ann Graham Lotz, Billy Graham's daughter. Danny Lotz, her husband, had played at North Carolina in the 1950s, 1957 to 59, and Ann invited me over to her house every Sunday night for a Bible study. She had the best apple pie you can ever imagine. But what was most important that happened was we just started talking about the Lord. We started talking about the scripture. And I saw her and Danny's deep faith. And it just made me want to hunger more and more for Jesus. So I had a real profound experience at a Fellowship of Christian Athletes camp. And that made my faith be sealed. So I walked, I think, fairly close with Jesus, even during my college days when I played basketball.
This is in the late 60s.
1967 to 71. And I really had a chance to share my faith all over the state. It became very real for me. And I really do believe that God was working in my life even then to prepare me for where He has me for today. Well, I played at Carolina, and then in 1971 had a really great NIT tournament in New York City. A team from Ostend, Belgium saw me play and signed me to a contract. I went there and played for 1 year. It was so cold you can't even imagine. I mean, you talk about cold here in America. It's right off the North Sea. That wind would whip in off the North Sea and bite you to the bone. And so I played the 1 year there, and I said, you know what? I don't think I want to come back here. So I joined a traveling team of Americans who traveled all over Europe to play different games, and we played in Nice, France on the French Riviera. I had a great game. It was one of those games I could have drop-kicked the ball, and it would have gone in the basket. I look back and go, it must have been God's sovereignty. But the team officials in Nice saw me play, and they signed me to a contract. I played there for 1 year and then another year. Had a great experience there. I'm still not married. I mean, most people say I needed to go in the ministry as a bachelor for 2 years on the French Riviera. But I mean, I had a great time there, enjoyed it, played well. Then I came back to Chapel Hill, was working the camp, and then suddenly got a—
What year is this then?
This is 1974.
Okay.
And I got a telegram from the team in Europe that said, They had voided my contract. I'd signed for a fourth year. They voided my contract because they wanted to sign another player. And actually, I know the player whom they signed, and they needed to sign him. He was really, really good, much better than I was. And so I was there sitting in Chapel Hill going, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You know, suddenly my basketball career was over. All that I'd worked for had ended. I'm going, what do I do now? So I asked Coach Smith, you know, can you have something for me, like a graduate assistantship? And he said, you know, David, I don't have anything. He said, why don't you call John Lotz at the University of Florida, who was my assistant coach at Caroline, who recruited me as well in high school. He's now the head coach at the University of Florida. Maybe he has something. So I called John and said, hey, John, do you have anything at all? And he said, you know, David, I don't. The graduate assistantship has already been promised to somebody else, but I'll keep my eyes open for you. Well, the next day, John calls me back and says, you're not going to believe this. The guy to whom I'd promised the graduate assistantship just came into my office and said, I don't want it. He said, do you want it? So I said, I think I do. And he said, well, you need to get to Gainesville, Florida immediately. So I got in the car, drove to Gainesville, met with John. This is July. And John said, well, if you're going to be a graduate assistant, you got to have a graduate program. What do you want to do? And I said, maybe I could be a counselor. You know, I'd always loved caring for people.
What was your undergrad degree in?
In communications. I had learned how to broadcast. I had a radio, television, and motion picture degree. I learned how to talk. I thought I was going to go into broadcasting. And then at Florida, I'm going, well, maybe I could be a counselor. And so John says, well, you know, it's July, and the courses begin in August. And then he looked at me and smiled and said, but you know, the head of the Gainesville Graduate Counseling Program is also president of the Gainesville Tip-Off Club and one of my closest friends. So he called him up and he came into the office. We talked for a while. He said, you know, we only take one out of every 100 applicants. And I went, oh boy, well, what am I going to do now? And he said, but you know, I'm the head of the program. I can do whatever I want to do. So I got into the program in 1974 and spent 2 years earning a graduate degree in psychology and counseling.
76, 77?
Yeah, right. This ended in 76.
Okay.
So at the end of the program, I'm sitting there going, I got an undergraduate degree in communications. I've got a graduate degree in counseling. And my faith is still very real to me. But I did not know what God wanted me to do. And Ed, what I want to set up for the next segment
is... Did you meet Marilyn by then?
I did not know Marilyn. Okay. This is part of the story. And
Stay tuned.
I had a point where I went, I'm not sure God's still what you want me to do. I've got these 2 degrees. I'm sitting here. And so, Ed, in my Gainesville, Florida apartment in 1976, I had a profound encounter with the Lord, a true call to ministry that began to make me who I am today. And I want to share that with people on the other side of the break because it was so profound and so moving, I was never the same. It really is the foundation for 40 years of preaching the gospel. Everyone, I look forward to telling you the next part of the story. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Well, I hope you don't mind that today, June the 28th, 2020, is my 40th anniversary of preaching the gospel. And I've done a trip down memory lane with my friend Ed Billick, my producer, who has his microphone open as well, and trying to look at those 40 years and what they meant. I was trying to give an overview of my life and what brought me to the place of call to ministry. And if you're just joining us, it's 1976. I'm in a Gainesville, Florida apartment. I'm alone. I have an undergraduate degree in communications. I have a graduate degree from the University of Florida in psychology and counseling. And I'm just seeking God, not knowing what's the next step.
And your mom's health, which is the reason you guys moved to Florida, is fine.
It's
right?
Perfect, yeah. The doctor was absolutely right. She had a strange,
because you had
weird
to leave Kansas
allergy.
Because of the terrible cold there.
Cold weather problem, and she goes to Orlando.
Was that part of the plan? Who knows?
She lived to be 86. And I know that God's overseeing everything. Folks, a part of my story is for the purpose of telling all of you God orders our steps. He's in control of everything. We need to trust him. So I'm in Gainesville, Florida in 1976, and I'm crying out to God, what do you want me to do? And Ed, this is the weird part of the story that I hope people don't think I'm too strange, but I got on my knees and I heard a voice, and it was as clear as a bell where it says, David, don't you know that from the foundations of the earth, I called you to preach my gospel? And I'm going to give you the opportunity to do so to kings and princes. Are you ready for an exciting adventure? And Ed, I responded and said, yes. And I gave my life to the proclamation of the gospel at that moment. Well, I called home and told Mom and Dad about that. And Mom later told me that even though they seemed kind of happy but rather stoic, oh, son, that's wonderful. Mom said that Dad wept like a baby after we hung up the phone, because he'd always felt like there was a call to preach the gospel upon my life. So I entered seminary in 1976, and I spent 2 years there earning my first part of the degree level, making a commitment not only to do a Master's of Divinity, but a Doctor of Ministry degree.
And this was where?
Columbia Theological Seminary in Atlanta, Georgia. So at the end of the second year, I have this guy that was a part of a college ministry that I was overseeing bug me about my needing to call this girl that he had met. Her name was Marilyn. She'd gone to the University of Georgia, and I needed to meet her. He said, in a weird way, your auras match. He said, hers is green and yours is gold. Well, he was into the New Age stuff, and I didn't understand him at all. And he kept bugging me and bugging me and bugging me. And I just saw this poor girl sitting by the phone, pining her life away, waiting for me to call, until finally I realized that there was a girl in the college group who might know her, because all I had was Marilyn, Tucker High School, University of Georgia. So I asked this girl who went to Tucker High School, do you know a girl named Marilyn who went to the University of Georgia? And she said, well, the only person I can think of is Marilyn Brame. She was a year older than I, and I don't know if she's in or not. And I said, well, would you do me a favor? Here's the phone number and call her. You know, the brave guy that I am. You know, my life's verse, Joshua 1:9, be bold and courageous. But this gal, Donna, called, and sure enough, it was Marilyn Brame. And I remember asking Donna, well, should I ask her out? I don't like blind dates. And she said, well, all I can tell you is, are you ready to fall in love? Wow. I thought that's kind of neat, because Donna was a neat gal. So I called.
You're old. How old at this time?
I'm 28. And okay. I called Marilyn, and we go out on a blind date together. Well, Ed, to make a long story short, 3 months later, we're engaged. 9 months later, we're married. And here we are 42 years later with 3 children and 7 grandchildren. I mean, she's the love of my life. All I can say to people is trust God, believe him, that he can even work through a weird guy like this guy who said our auras match, meeting Marilyn, falling in love, and now her being the love of my life for all of these years. She's been just a great partner. And so we married in 1978, and then we came to Charlotte when I graduated from Columbia Seminary in 1980 and started our ministry again on June the 29th, 1980.
And where was that?
That was at Forest Hill Church over on Woodlawn Road. It was just a small church of about 100 or so people, and they were wonderful folks, the most godly and good people you can possibly imagine. They'd been praying for 9 months for God to send them someone who really wanted to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they could not have been warmer, more accepting. We came there, and they embraced us greatly, warmly, powerfully, and we just began a love relationship with those folks. It was just so neat.
Charlotte was a small town, well, a lot smaller than it is today. 485 didn't even exist, or it did. I don't recall. I mean, but hearing folks talk, so you knew nothing about this community.
Well, nothing except what I knew as a child, because my dad had been a pastor of Westminster Presbyterian Church here from 1953 to 63.
Okay,
so we knew Charlotte that way, but I moved away going into my seventh grade year in middle school. So I don't remember a whole lot of it. I mean, I drive by Westminster today and I go, oh, I remember some of the things I used to do there, but I didn't remember Charlotte that well. But you're right, it was more of a smaller, sleepy southern town that was just beginning to burgeon because the banking industry was putting a lot of assets into the city. We saw growth, but it really wasn't the kind of growth that anyone expected until in 1984, 5, 6, a guy by the name of George Shinn had a vision to bring an NBA team to Charlotte. And again, the joke in the NBA was the only franchise that Charlotte will ever see is one with golden arches. But George Shinn had a vision, and he was able to get an NBA team to come to Charlotte. And that began to make Charlotte be on the map. The banking industry began to expand and grow, and Charlotte became nicknamed the New Atlanta. But it brought all of those problems, too, with traffic congestion, with crime being increased, with racial tensions being more increased. So we saw with Charlotte's growth and prosperity, more of the present problems that Charlotte's even facing today begin to occur.
Go back to your first sermon, the first day you preached. What was your message?
It was from Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. Where Joshua is taking the reins from Moses. This 40-year time period is a really interesting biblical narrative, for Moses spent 40 years in Pharaoh's court as the prince of Egypt, then spent 40 years in the wilderness where God shaved off a lot of junk in his life, then 40 years with the call of God, the burning bush experience, where he then led God's people from Egypt to the edge of the promised land. So that 40-year narrative is really interesting in the Bible, as I'm now in my 40th year of ministry. And we felt like that God had really called us here. We cemented our lives and focused our heart to be here. And we just saw what God wanted us to do. So that Joshua 1:9 verse was so important to us, because we believe God had called us to look at the problems in the community and in the world and to be bold and to be courageous. And the wonderful thing that God says to Joshua as Moses hands him the leadership reins is, I'll be with you wherever you go. He says, don't be fearful, don't be dismayed, for I will be with you wherever you go. And it's hit me through the years, Ed, the only biblical antidote that God really gives to fear and anxiety is his presence. He says, do not fear, for I am with you. He says to Joshua, don't be dismayed or afraid, for I will be with you wherever you go. Jesus, in his last words before he ascended to heaven, said, I'll be with you always till the close of the age. God's presence is the only real strong antidote to fear and anxiety that I know. So I've tried to be bold and courageous with my stands for truth. I've tried to help people in the direst of situations. And when there's been danger, and I've faced some death threats through the years, you know, it's a wacky culture. People are crazy. Even 40 years ago, if you took stands for things like life or racial equality or things like that, you could get death threats. I got my share. But you just need to stand firm and say, you know, I know that God called me in 1976. I know that he wants me to do ministry. And I know I need to stand for life, life in abundance. And that when I get opposition, I'm going to continue, like Joshua, to be bold and be courageous, because I know that my God is with me no matter what I face.
You know, as I got to know you, Dave, and when I first moved here, I would listen to you and said, I got to meet this guy someday. But you took the gifts that he provided you, your communication skills, your ability to ad lib, and of course, the passion you have for the faith, and blended all that with your counseling skills. I mean, what a perfect kind of three pieces to make you successful in the person you are today.
You know, Ed, when you look at what a minister has to be today, he has to be someone who can listen well and care and be compassionate, but he also has to be someone who can communicate. And you look at my life and my history, you see that God gave me an undergraduate degree in communications, then gave me a graduate degree in counseling psychology. It was almost like he had every step of the way planned for me. And what's also interesting is, if I hadn't had that team in Europe send that message to me that they were letting me go, if I didn't go to Florida right when I went, and then if I didn't go to Atlanta right at that time, I would have never met Marilyn. I would have never had the opportunity to meet her on a blind date in kind of a circumstantial situation and see that God is in control of everything. Folks, our steps are ordered. He oversees it all. And what's so magnificent is he promises to be with us.
We only have one segment left. I just looked. We're going into the fourth segment. What do you want to share with the audience when we come back after the break?
Well, let's look at the culture today and how it's changed over 40 years, and how even though it's a bit darker, there's still hope as God's people in this culture. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. I've been walking down memory lane today. I've spent 40 years in ministry here in this city. My first sermon was June the 29th, 1980. Here it is, June the 28th, 2020, 40 years later, I'm actually preaching at a farm in Clover, South Carolina to some hundreds of people at 9 o'clock here on Sunday morning, and it's going to be a great, great experience to celebrate 40 years of preaching. And I hope you haven't minded me walking down this memory lane and reminiscing over the call that God gave my life. It's been such a powerful time to do so, and my wife and I have enjoyed thinking about 40 years together and also 40 years of doing ministry in this community. I'm asked regularly, what's the difference between 1980 and 2020? Well, you know, people still live and people still have families and people need jobs and people want to supply for themselves. I would say, though, that what's interesting to me is there has been a real shift in the last 5-6 years like I've never seen it before, where it seems like self-autonomy and moral subjectivity are the two gods that have elevated themselves in our culture. Self-autonomy being that I can decide what I think is true. If I want to, it's my right to do so. And moral subjectivity is that my emotions and what I feel define what is true morality. And as I see those two things take the center stage of American life, those of us who have faith are challenged more and more to believe that, first of all, we're not self-autonomous, that we are God-autonomous. God is the one whom we worship. And then secondly, we don't have moral subjectivity. We don't look at our feelings defining morality. We look at God defining our morality. So as the culture takes these shifts toward a bit more autonomy against God, those of us who love God have got to stand with greater truth and greater love. And believe me, we've got to find that delicate balance between grace and truth. It's so hard. It's really difficult. But we need to look at loving our neighbor because that's the command of the Lord, but also standing for truth. There is truth, folks. I mean, there's a North Star in the sky. It's a fixed star, and it will always be fixed. It's going to stand to guide us. The same is true with the morals of our day. Even though they're shifting to more, I want to believe what I want to believe based on what I feel, there are fixed moral laws that we've got to follow. And chaos comes when we don't follow those moral laws. So my heartbeat is to continue to be salt and light in this world. You know, Jesus himself said, salt doesn't work unless it's in the food. If you try to put salt by the side, eventually it becomes saltless and it'll be trampled underfoot with no value or tastiness whatsoever. But salt placed in food gives saltiness to the food, and it also preserves the food. So we need to be salt in this culture, but also we need to be light. And where it gets darker, we get brighter. The most beautiful diamond is behold when it's placed against the backdrop of a black velvet backdrop. So when we see the brightness of the diamond against the darkness, we know it's even brighter than ever before. So we can be the light in the world of standing for truth. And as the culture becomes darker, we can stand for more light. And I think the culture will be drawn to that light like moths are drawn to light because it knows that that's the way we're supposed to live. And remember, everyone, please give your life away. Be instruments of love. Remember that our job description, John 10:10, is like Jesus. He came to give life and to give it to us abundantly. Anything that gives life to other people is what we should be about. Don't be a part of death. Don't be a part of darkness. Don't be a part of cruelty. Don't be a part of destruction. That's from the enemy. That's darkness.
And don't be negative. You are very, very positive. Positive people live long, wonderful lives. You got to be positive, and you always have that hope. Hope with it's your Dr. Hope.
Well, I live by hope. I don't know what else we have. You know, if I approach each day believing woe is me, an Eeyore mindset, you know, eventually I'm just going to be so discouraged and despondent, I might as well die. I'm of no use to the world. I'm certainly not salt or light. So I have to live in that hope, Ed. That's what I know the Lord has called me to do. And I would invite all of our listeners to be a part of a movement of hope, to go give light and love to this world. It is so dark, it needs people who will not burn things down, but build things up. It needs people who will love, not hate. It needs people who will give their lives away, not be so selfish. And we need people who will love God with all their heart, soul, minds, and might, and love their neighbors as themselves. Those are the two commandments from our Lord. And again, if we do those two things, we have a lifetime's worth of work. We have a job description that will never end. There's always somebody in need. There's always somebody that needs hope. And we can be those instruments of hope in their lives. And I know God called me to be that person of hope, to preach the gospel of hope for 40 years now. And hopefully people have better lives because Marilyn and I have been in this community. We're just so thankful for the 40 years we've been able to give to this community. And yet I hope you're right that somehow, some way, there have been some numbers of people whose hearts have been touched because we have been able to be here for these 40 years. So please, folks, keep moving forward. Don't let despair overcome you. Don't let darkness be that which consumes your heart. There is hope. Why do I believe that? Because God is on his throne. I believe that God can be a game changer. If you're in darkness right now, he can show light immediately and change your life in 1 second. But you've got to believe that that can happen. And faith is the key to making hope become real in our hearts.
You know, some folks say life for us getting up in our ages, life is shorter now for us. But every day is a gift from God. And you truly believe that because every day when you say the sun comes up. So how do you provide the best value for yourself and others every day of your life?
Yeah, I think it's rooted in that whole idea of loving God and loving neighbor. If you can love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might, and love your neighbor as yourself, just do those two things. Do that throughout the day. You know, pray every morning, God, lead me to somebody who needs a touch of hope. You know, let my life touch somebody else who needs hope. And if you would ask that prayer every morning, I really believe the Holy Spirit who lives in you will guide you to people who just need a touch of hope, who need a word of hope, who need something to give them a reason for living. And that's when you are salt and light. You're in darkness, you're in the world, and serving the Lord you love so much.
Say it's time for a prayer.
Well, thank you for letting me stroll down memory lane. Listeners, Ed, thank you for helping me do so. And I hope that Maryland's and my lives here in this community have made a difference to you and to many others. Let's pray together. Well, Father in heaven, Daddy, Papa, the one I know as my loving Daddy because Jesus told me so. He modeled it. He gave me your love. Thank you for 40 years, Lord. I pray that something I've said, some way I've lived has helped people be more faithful, has given them a reason for hope, a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to keep moving forward. I thank you for Ed Billick, my friend and my producer, who has allowed me to do these programs over these last years of being together, and I pray blessings upon him. I pray blessings upon all our listeners right now. I pray that the favor of the Lord, the blessings of the Lord would fall upon each one of you listening right now. I pray that if anyone feels despair, God would touch your heart and give you hope. I feel if anyone feels like they're living in darkness, God would shine a light in your soul and say, there's a new day coming. Keep believing it. Have a new attitude. There's something good that's going to happen to you. And I pray for those who are hurting because they have loved ones who are sick or maybe themselves are sick. Lord, I pray for a healing touch for them all. I pray that you would protect people from the COVID crisis. I pray that that would not spread in our city or our county anymore. I pray, Lord, that we would find a cure to that disease. I pray there'd be a vaccine that could be used that would allow us to be free from any fear of that disease. I pray you'd heal our land. I pray that people of different colors would come together and love one another. We'd quit tearing down statues, Lord, and build the statue of you in our hearts. And let ourselves be consumed with love of God and love of neighbor. Oh, Lord, when we love one another, that's when our city will become whole. When we love one another, that's when we'll have the chance to be the kind of city you want this place to be. When we love one another, we are following you in perfect faithfulness. So, Lord, let us love one another. Let that be the passion of our lives. Let that be the call that we receive. Let that be what guides us every single day. I pray this in the name of the Lord of love, the one I know is Jesus. Please, Lord, let us love one another. In your name I pray it. Amen.